stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for the best morning show on the internet. It's time for Sam in the Morning with Brigetta, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Tuesday, May 15th.
Hola.
Welcome to the show. Welcome, Brigetta.
Welcome you. I got my Java Monster. I'm ready to jive.
Yeah. Is that one an energy drink too?
Yeah.
Really?
It's like
the tea?
No. Peace tea. It's like natural tea. It's really good. Peace tea is awesome. This one's the Java Monster again. It's coffee plus energy.
Really?
It's just so good.
Does it taste good? I'll have to try.
Yeah. Like I said, it's like orgasmic.
Yeah.
In a can. Because it's toffee flavored.
Oh, okay. That's orgasmic, I guess.
Yeah. To me, it is. But yeah, no, it's not bubbly. It's actually like cold coffee. Like, you know, like the Starbucks shots.
Uh huh.
It's like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to try that sometime.
You will have to try that sometime.
Yeah.
It was amazingness.
Yeah. So how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I had a bunch of things to say, and then I can't remember what I was going to say, so.
Oh, okay. Well, did you have anything exciting happen yesterday?
You know what? I kind of helped people move all day yesterday, so that was interesting.
That's fine.
So, yeah. Whatever.
Good for you. That's nice of you, you know? I would never help anybody move.
You would never help anyone move? That's fucked. But I felt good. I mean, whatever. I was exhausted from the whole weekend. I'm still, you know, from the whole yoga experience this weekend, so I've been kind of like out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I went to bed at like 7 last night.
Really?
I know. And then I got up super early. I was like, I gotta pump some iron. Actually, this is funny. So I went to the gym this morning, and I go to LA Fitness recently bought like all the Bally's. So it's like this dumpy Bally's place near me, whatever. But it's down the street. And so I go there and I'm cracking up laughing because it's cute. It's sweet. They have like this morning class.
Uh-huh.
And I'm used to like going to like hardcore gyms, you know, and just like, where am I right now?
So this one was too easy?
It was like a paradox, I felt like, of like old people. And like, no offense to old people, but it was like you had to be a senior citizen in order to be there. And I'm watching this class and I'm like, oh my freaking God, where am I right now? And it was so cute because there's like, you know, like old men that are like moving their hands that can barely move, and they're like, they're attempting to work out, I guess, but I just looked at a couple other like dudes that were lifting weights, and I was like, where are we right now?
Yeah, that's not for you, huh?
It was really funny.
So where's the other 24 Fitness that you went to?
Oh, no, the other ones I go to are in Hollywood and wherever
else.
Oh, I see,
okay, so now there's a closer one.
Yeah, it's just like literally right there, but I'm just like, look at my girlfriend, I look at these like two dudes, and I'm like, where are we? We're like youngest ones here, and I'm like, okay, it was just funny, it was cute, but I'm like, this is not a place, which is good in a way, it's not a place to pick up like chicks or dudes running on whatever, which, you know, a way irritates me. I've told you that before. Like I go to the gym and a dude comes and hits on me. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me right now? I'm sweaty and gnarly and disgusting. I'm trying to work out. Leave me the fuck alone. You know? And like I told you before, the other gym in Hollywood is where they sell Extends cans, like Extends cans.
Really?
Now Extends makes your penis bigger.
Right.
Like I was the face of Extends for a long time. And it's an energy drink. Now, why the hell would I want you to go and buy an energy drink to make your penis bigger and get you all horny when you're in the gym? Are you serious? Because that makes sense. Makes no sense. Like, I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me at all.
That's where the guys are, so they push it there. You know?
I realize like the buyer for this gym must be like extremely horny all the time or gets no play. So she's like, oh, I'm gonna order Extends in a can so I get hit on. I don't know. Like, what is the theory behind that? Like, what? Guys already walk around the gym like macho enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I like watching the eye candy. I do. Just, you know, don't talk to me when I'm working out.
Yeah.
Unless I'm like, I don't know how to work this machine, and I start twirling my hair, and then it's like, okay, then I want to hit on you. Then I want you to touch me.
So is there a lot of that going on in gyms and stuff?
Yes, all the time. Like, guys come up, and especially when you're in, like, the weight room, like the free weight room, because, there's a lot of you know, hot,
muscular
amazing
guys,
nurse around, and
right.
I'm watching, yes.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying not to. I'm not going to let you know that I'm paying attention. You know what I mean? But it's like, I want to be left alone when I'm in there, you
uh-huh.
know? Unless, uh-huh. I will say that one time I did meet a guy in the gym a couple years back, and we wound up hanging out for a bit, and it was amazing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay.
But it was like me, like, I was like, oh, I don't know how to use this machine. Now, it was a sit-up thing. Are you kidding me? Obviously, I'm, like, being an idiot on purpose. Like, show me how to do this right. Just touch my abs, damn it. That's all I want.
Wow.
And we wound up hanging out, and it was great sex. So, yeah. There you go.
There you go.
But...
go to the gym to pick up guys.
Right. Yeah. But I'm not... Yeah. Now, I don't want to be talked to. So, okay. I don't... In a way, it was like, okay, so I'm at this old folky gym. I don't
so
necessarily
want to
watch...
So, you're not the type that puts on, like, makeup and stuff when you go to the gym and shit?
Those are the bitches that I make fun of. Yeah. Who the hell wears makeup in a gym? You're going to a gym to work out. What the fuck is
right.
wrong with you?
Well, they want to look good.
It's ridiculous. It's called I'm laughing at you, Barbie. Seriously? It's just, it's those girls that like get all dressed up to go to the gym, right? And
yeah.
then they sit there, they sit on a machine forever, and every once in a while they like move their leg. You know? It's like, I'm working out.
So they're just there for the fun of it. Huh?
Or they like they drop the ball and they bend over and I'm like, okay, really? I mean, I'm gonna look,
yeah.
but it's yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't know. I need to find a good gym. You know, everybody's going to the gym except me.
Don't go to Crunch.
I gotta go.
Don't go to what's the 24 hour? The other one. Anyway, it's on Sepulveda. I can't think of the name.
Yeah, LA Fitness or something?
No, those are fine. I'm just
right.
saying, like, if you go to, if you pay for a super expensive gym,
yeah.
then you're getting the girl, I mean, maybe you like that, actually. You're getting the people that wear makeup to the gym that are just going to fuck. Like,
really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That are going to, like, get, like, I hate those places.
Really?
I can't stand that. I hate them. I'd rather go to, like, you know, Gold's or
yeah.
LA Fitness. Or
where people are serious about
where people
working
are, like,
out.
You go
right.
and you work out.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right. Well, I'll go to the gyms.
That's my feel for, like, the day.
I'll go to the other gyms.
Yeah, you're like, I just need some eye candy.
Yeah.
You can go to the wine when you can drink a bottle of Extends beforehand.
Yeah,
watch
there you
what
go.
Happens. And then let me know, and I'll forward it to you. What?
Now, about one bottle alone doesn't work.
It makes you
it?
Super horny. Yes,
really?
It does. I've
oh.
done it.
Really?
I was a spokesperson for
no,
8 years.
No, I know, but I thought it's for guys.
Yeah, but the girls can drink the drink. It makes you super horny.
Really?
Yes. I've wow. drank one, and I was like, I will say, they say girls can drink it, mm-hmm. but I don't think you should, because afterwards, I was like super horny. I was like, whoa, this is crazy. It's kind yeah. of like a liquid form of ecstasy in a way,
right.
which, by the way, they're making.
Really?
No, I'm not even kidding. That's like Extends' newest thing that's coming out soon. But it was super horny, but it makes you, like, girls, I don't know mm-hmm. about the guys yet, but it makes the girls burp. So bad you'll clear the room.
Really?
No, I'm not kidding. Like, I was burping and it was like awful. And I'm like, oh my God.
Wow.
That came out of my mouth. Wow. It was really bad. So I
really?
Never
so one drink
again.
Will make you horny.
One drink
right.
makes you horny, yeah.
But if you're a horny person, you don't really need that.
You will be super horny.
Right.
You know, you're
okay.
just, yeah. Mm-hmm. Try it. I think you and your wife should try it.
I don't need that. I'm
no,
horny
just,
all the time.
Just
anyway.
One night, just have it and be like, make a funny commercial out of this. Mix it with alcohol and see what happens.
Yeah,
cool.
That sounds
That's
interesting.
Just dangerous.
Yeah.
All over. Okay.
All right. Well, so much for working out, you know.
Yeah.
Well, we invited a special guest to the studio. Actually, you did.
Yeah.
And we're glad to have him in the studio. Go ahead and introduce him.
He's got a very interesting life. This is Kenji Gallo in the studio. And
welcome, Kenji.
Hello.
And I will let you tell more about everything, because you have, like, a book coming out or something, too, right? Or something.
It already
or
came
documentary.
Out,
yeah, and he's got, like, a documentary on. He's got all kinds of things. He's all over the place.
Really? So you're
but
a busy man these
a
days.
A very interesting
yes,
life.
Yes, I'm always busy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so... a little background. Why don't you tell us a little background on him?
Why don't
stuff?
You tell us a little background? I have
well,
it right in front of
but
me.
But we've got a director where to start.
Okay.
So what are you famous for?
Well, he was no. involved in, like, he was, you know, like a nowadays gangster in a
really?
Way.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. So he's got really a lot of stories about that. And then turned informant, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
And then he's a director. He's got many things going on in his life. So
wow.
I'd like him to just start and tell me everything.
Yeah. So you were, like, on the wrong side of the law, and then you moved over to the other side.
Correct. I was
in the Los Angeles family, the Cosa Nostra, the Milano crime family, for about 11 years.
See, I think that's hot.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's like the real mafia, not like, I don't know, all these people that pretend. And then I moved to Brooklyn, New York, and I was part of the Colombo family for 7 years. Mm. And 8 years I wore a wire for the FBI, so one of the longest guys to wear a wire. And
wow.
I infiltrated the Colombo family and the Lucchese family and some other families in New York. And
that's awesome.
They're still doing cases. They took Mafia Takedown Day with some of the guys that I did. 127 guys went down. And I still get called. I was telling you guys before, I go do speaking engagements for law enforcement.
Uh-huh.
And I advise them, and I talk to guys that are going to go undercover, and I tell them like how to do it. And then I'm a consultant for TV shows. I'm a writer for TV shows.
So many things.
Amazing.
Yeah. So
amazing.
I'm like, he's everywhere.
Yeah.
So I'm like, where do you start?
But we'll start at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, just how did you first get involved in, you know, the crime family out here? Like, how did that?
Well, I started because I had a job at a restaurant when I was about 13 years old. And that restaurant happened to be like where the Medellin cartel, which was the cocaine in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And a lady named Griselda Trujillo Blanco, which they made Cocaine Cowboys about, her and her sons were there. And I was just like the young kid, but I've always been into martial arts, a kickboxer, jiu-jitsu. And so they knew I was a tough guy. I knew what to do. But I also knew how to keep my mouth shut, and I'm smart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more important than being tough, is to be smart. So they just like me, and I just, for some reason, I have no idea. I just decided that was like my goal in life, was to become one of them. And then I met guys from Cosa Nostra and the Mafia when I was there in the LA family. And then it was a natural progression.
And
everything else from there.
So let's go back to the beginning. Are you originally from L.A., from California?
I was born in Los Angeles.
Okay.
I grew up in Orange County, California, Irvine and Newport Beach.
Cool. So that was like a nice area you grew up in.
Oh.
No?
Oh, tremendous.
Upper
middle class.
OC, yeah.
There's no ghetto. There's no ghetto in Irvine.
No.
Cool. And so you grew up there and you went to school and stuff. Do you have any siblings?
Yeah, I have a sister.
Oh, a sister. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not like you had a bunch of wild brothers and stuff that got you into trouble and things like that.
You rebelled.
Yeah, no brother, no nothing. I went to a military boarding school too.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that toughened you up a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How old were you then?
7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th grade.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Why did they send you there? Were you a troublemaker?
Oh, I was just a bad kid.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, not really bad compared to later on, but you know, just acting up. But I mean, I got good grades. I always got like straight A's and everything. Just bad discipline.
Yeah. No, because I'm trying to find out where it starts, you know, how you end up ending. You end up in a place like this, like you did. And, you know, so usually I think it starts from childhood, something where maybe you don't get enough attention or whatever. What do you think was the case with you? You would just like to get into trouble?
I feel like your parents were really strict and you were like, screw this.
Yeah, but the military school and everything.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, you know what? I'm over it. And I always saw that the grass is greener on the other side of the fence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm always chasing after that new excitement, and it just didn't work out like that.
Yeah. So, but you were in a nice neighborhood, right?
My school. I mean, guys that went to my school were guys from Sugar Ray. Will Ferrell was in my class. The actor.
Yeah.
A lot of writers and people up here.
That's cool.
In Hollywood.
So it's not like you were hanging out with bad people or anything.
No.
Mm-hmm. Right.
No.
Just good. Yeah. Well.
You know what though? I mean, I was a good student, but I was bad.
Right.
I was really bad growing up, and I went to Catholic school.
Yeah.
And I mean, I broke into the school. I stole shit. I like rearranged classrooms. I sold papers. I did a lot of crazy things that I can't even say that I did.
Yeah.
I was just, but you know, my parents were so strict that I was like, I just, fuck this.
You kind of rebelled.
I rebelled,
right?
Yeah. And I did run with a rough crew for a minute.
Yeah.
And I went to Brooklyn. So it's funny because I was like, in that way, it's like, oh, I totally relate. And I did that for a minute. And then my parents tore us apart kind of, and from the crew that I was like with, and I was running with all kinds of people. It was interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
How did they break you away from all that?
They're insane. My dad likes guns.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to discipline my kids too.
I got in a lot of trouble. Yeah. A lot of trouble when I was 18. A lot that I don't even talk about. And then I moved away.
Yeah.
And then all was different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you're on your own, look out.
So, I totally relate in a way, because it's like I grew up in it. My dad's very well known.
Yeah.
It has a huge corporation. And, you know, just, I don't know.
Yeah, a rather normal childhood, right? I mean, for the most part.
Oh, no, good.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, upper middle class. And
Pretty good. Now, so you grew up, and then let's go back to the story of you being 13 years old. You went and got your first job.
Yeah, well, my dad actually got me a job with a friend of his at a Japanese restaurant. But his friend had a partner named Joey, who was one of the biggest cocaine dealer at the time in California.
They're always named Joey.
Yeah. Or Tony or something. Yeah.
So, wow. And then his restaurant just happened to be the hangout for all the organized crime guys in Southern California.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
So you were just introduced to this at a young age. Now, what were you seeing? I mean, were you like eavesdropping to what they were, or maybe overhearing what they were saying and things like that? How did you become fascinated with them?
Well, I just like, they used to pull up. I mean, they weren't like anyone else. They pull up in like Porsche cabriolets. This is the 1980s. I mean, no one had that kind of stuff. They come out like silk shirts, the Rolex. And I was like, wow, that's what I want to do.
Wow.
And then like within maybe a week, I already knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And then I remember I was at it was a sushi bar, and I was like helping a guy named TK, and he had a napkin on the table, and he's like, hey, come here. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, you ever seen this before? And he had and it was like a rock of cocaine. And, and I said, yeah, but I had never seen it.
Yeah.
And he's like, here's your tip. Boom. And he threw it to me.
Oh my God.
And so I brought it to my friends, and I'm like, hey, check this out. And he's like, oh my God, it's like an 8-ball. He's like, at that point, they were like $300 for an 8-ball. It was huge.
Wow.
And so I was like hooked on the power of it.
Wow.
Really? Yeah. Had you done any drugs before that?
I dabbled, but never did cocaine. I never even seen it.
Yeah.
Just pot or something like that?
Yeah, just pot.
Wow. So this was the first time you saw cocaine.
Yeah.
And you showed this to your friend and everything. Did you try it that
time? Yeah, yeah.
Really?
But after I showed it to everyone, I was like, I saw the power that it had
that
over
it had.
Every single person.
Yeah.
And then I said, this is what I need to do.
And you're like, oh, I can get more.
Yeah.
And then it became
like I have the hookup.
Yeah. So, wow.
So did you soon become hooked on it?
I never became hooked on cocaine.
Really?
I'm never hooked on any drugs.
But
at all.
But you did it a lot, right? I mean, did you start doing it a lot?
Not really. I mean, I would every once, like maybe once a month, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not right. much.
It's just like there. I think it's the power of the fact that he could get it, and he could, you know, everyone was like, oh, I want this, I want that.
You can kind of control people.
Yeah, I control everyone. Because also, it's not about, my whole deal was, why would I want to do it when I could just get the money?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like this, if I'm snorting drugs, that's my profit.
Right.
Yeah, I'd rather have the money. I'm not in this to like just to support a habit. I'm in here to make real money.
Right.
And that's the smart way.
Yeah.
Never do your own stash.
Yeah.
Never get high on your own supply.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, did you start dealing right away?
Oh yeah, right away.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I mean, I was dealing pot and cocaine, and then I quickly found out that there was like really no money in pot, and back then there was none. Now there's money, but but there was none. It just was, you have this huge bulky thing and you make like, you know, 200 bucks. I can have a little tiny thing and make $200 in like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I'd rather go with a little tiny thing.
Yeah. Never mind the risk and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's no smell. And you know, when I first started in the 80s, regular street cops and everything weren't really even used to, they didn't even really know what it looked like.
Yeah.
Mm. Like if you had a kilo, because everyone's so used to seeing like bags, like big bags of cocaine on TV, that if you had a kilo, which was on a brick wrapped up with like duct tape and everything else and like sealed, they wouldn't even know, and wouldn't even know what it is. I could just literally walk down the street.
Really?
And like, yeah, I could.
Put it underneath.
I could. I just put it underneath my hand, put it with a book, and just walk down the street, and no one would ever even know what it was because no one had seen him at this point.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you just approached the guy, The guy with the cocaine, and you said, let me buy some from you. I want to deal.
Well, yeah. Well, no, I just started like, I started being real friendly with him because I was like the, I started off as like a dishwasher busboy. And then like within 3 weeks, I wasn't even doing that. I was, hey, go to this liquor store and get me this bottle. Get me a pack of cigarettes. Here, here's 20. Give me a pack of cigarettes. Keep the change.
Yeah. Wow.
You know,
like the errand boy at first, like just to earn his trash.
Yeah.
Kind of
park
thing.
My car.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Remember, I had to take a bus to get there too. I had no car. I didn't have a driver's license, so I had to take a bus.
Oh my god, because you're like really young.
Yeah,
still.
I was really young.
Oh, that's
so I used to have to take, literally take a bus and then get a transfer to get there.
Oh my god.
And then I started to meet everyone, and then I just through him I met another guy named Alex, and Alex was the man, and he quickly saw that I kept my mouth shut and I can make cash for everybody.
Right. So did they approach you about that? I mean,
I was like really, I was really interested in it, but then they weren't really interested in me dealing so much as moving parcels, moving money, picking up stuff, and that it was because I could like get on the bus.
Right.
With like $100,000 and no one would ever look at me.
Because you're a kid. They wouldn't suspect you at all. Yeah.
No one would even want, like, who'd want to look at my backpack?
Right. Exactly.
So yeah, I quit. I started doing stuff like that.
Yeah. Now, you knew you were doing illegal things and stuff. Were you scared?
Never.
Never?
Never.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's what it takes to do illegal things.
Yeah.
You can't be scared, you know? Wow.
That's I think of, well, not that I did anything that crazy, but I mean, I've done some crazy stuff. It's like, the rush you get, it's kind of like this, your own high of like, oh my God, this is so awesome because nobody knows and blah, 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 blah. And if I get caught, I'm going to lie my way out of it.
Right.
You know, and I was pretty good at making up shit.
Yeah.
Almost caught. Not to like your, I mean, I never did to that extent, but that's all, I mean, not saying that's awesome. Kids, if you're listening, shut up. I think that's awesome that you like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
want to
shut up.
Well, it's an interesting story. Yeah, don't encourage kids or anything.
No. What I say about that, the whole lifestyle is it looks promising from the outside.
But
once you're involved, I mean, it's for real. Your friends, the front of my book has like 20 people. Those are all my friends that have died.
Really?
Killed, murdered, or suicide. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I was talking to another one of my friends who went into the witness protection program. And we're talking about, you know, the mafia, the Cosa Nostra. And I said, do you know of any happy stories, any good endings?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And he said, no.
Really?
Never. Yeah. And he's older. He's older, a lot older than me. Yeah. And I had another friend of mine who passed away last year. He was 92 years old.
Yeah.
You know, he was a high ranking guy in L.A. and from Buffalo, New York. And we talked a month before he passed away. And I said, and he told me, it's like, this life has been horrible. Mm. I thought it was one thing and it didn't turn out to be. And we both said there's no happy endings to this life.
Wow.
Yeah. So how did this develop? I mean, at a certain point, did they have to sort of like bring you in? Or, I mean, you were fascinated with this lifestyle. Did you make a conscious decision? I want to work with these guys. I want to be like them.
I made a big decision. I said, this is what I want out of my life. This is where I'm going. And I did everything that I could to point myself in the direction of upward mobility in the mob.
Wow. So you started. So what were the next things they started letting you do after you were like the.
Well, really, what I really was like I was really into transportation, transporting cocaine, hiding it. And I mean, large amounts, like 30 to 150 kilos at a time.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, and then
that's like millions of dollars.
Yeah. Millions of dollars.
Wow.
Cocaine. And then once I was able to drive, then I used to drive stash cars around. I mean, I'll give you an example. When I graduated high school, I was 18. I just turned 18 years old. Everyone else was going off on some trips, you know, for senior trips.
Yeah.
Me, I was smuggling cocaine to Hawaii.
Wow.
kilos upon kilos upon, because back then you could just get, like, first of all, you could just buy tickets with cash.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no one thought anything of it. So what I would do is I would go to the travel agent, and I already planned this out. I mean, the minute I got my diploma and I did this. So what I did is I had gone to the travel agent and I bought a ticket, round trip ticket, and then I went to another travel agent and I bought another round trip ticket. And so this one dropped me off. Then I would drop off the coke and pick up money. And then in 3 hours, I was going to come back on a different one. So I would ditch that other ticket because who cared?
Right.
And then the other one, you know what I mean? So it was never like, hey, I'm just going to go there and then come back. It would be two different things.
Right.
And then you could use any name because they didn't ask IDs back then.
That's true. Yeah. So it was a lot easier.
Yeah, it was a lot easier to travel.
So you just get on a plane with all this coke and nobody says anything.
Well, I used to, in my carry-on, I would carry like, you know, 4 to 5 kilos of coke. Wow. And in Hawaii at the time, they were worth like 45,000, I think, a piece. Something,
wow.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And then the guys that were already there, so I'd pick up their cash and then I would just fly the cash back.
Wow.
And that was, and Hawaii, because I'm half Japanese, half Italian. I fit in.
Right.
I look like I'm a local island person, so.
Yeah.
Once again, and I had this whole like kid look down. I would dress down, bring a backpack. I always read books, so I'd be reading. And here the DEA and everyone else is like looking for like drug dealers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And here's me just doing my thing. So that's how it happened.
Yeah. So you started with the drugs and everything, and you were with that particular gang at that point, right?
Yes.
Now you, how did it? I mean, did you leave that group eventually and move somewhere else?
Well, like around in 1989, the bottom pretty much fell out of the cocaine market. I mean, it sputtered on to the 90s, but the big money, I mean, it went down from like 45 to like $11,000 a kilo. So really, there's to me, the risk and reward wasn't there anymore, and I can see the writing on the wall. It was the beginning of the end. The Medellin cartel, the guys were getting killed. So.
Yeah.
My other friends were already into gambling and pornography, and I'm really good with numbers, and I had already dabbled in the gambling. And so I just went right into gambling.
Yeah.
And it's funny how you find all these illegal things.
You know?
Well, and even like gambling and pornography, it's basically the same as drugs. You're dealing in people's weaknesses. You know what I mean?
Okay.
What they people need. You're exploiting people's weaknesses.
Right.
So it's the same. It's basically the same business.
Right.
And so I just went from that into gambling, which I find is really funny that people make gambling illegal. Like, it's cool that you can do it in Vegas, or if you're an Indian, you can do it, or you can do it at a car club in LA. But, you know, I mean, every newspaper, every sports show, they put the odds in there.
Oh, yeah, they do. You're right.
And the reason that they do that is for gamblers, which is illegal.
Right.
And then they even made Monday Night Football so that all the gamblers could recoup all their losses for the weekend.
From Sunday.
Yeah, from the weekend.
Actually.
And even the reason that they even put odds is so that it's for the gambling, but also so that if you have a favorite team, that you'll still watch because you already bet on the game, even if they're losing. They're losing the game, you'll still watch it to the very end, so the sponsors continue to pay for it.
Right.
You know, because it doesn't matter if they're losing. If they don't lose by like 14 points, you're okay.
Right.
So
right.
The guys are sitting there like that. So it's kind of hypocritical. I look at the paper, USA Today, I look at the paper, and it's like, oh, you know, it's -7 for this, or like, it's just funny that.
Yeah.
I never thought about that, but you're absolutely right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm one of those idiots that watch football.
So when you were doing the gambling, were you part of a group also? I mean, were you guys like con men and?
No, I mean I was I'm part of a crew. But that by that point I'm already you know, basically part of the LA family. And you know, it's a huge group of I mean, it's a mafia, it's a Cosa Nostra.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. Yeah. And we're you know, I kick up money and we're just part of the group.
Right.
So that's it. What was like the maybe? Think of like the craziest thing that maybe you saw that happened, or can you not say?
Talk about anything.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, but even like, well, even like my friend Joey, I mean, he was driving home in his Porsche in Newport Beach. He was driving down, I mean, $1 million houses, Back Bay on one side, 12:30 at night on May 7th, 1987. A motorcycle is following behind him. He starts to turn around a corner. A guy flags him down. The motorcycle pulls up next to his window. They fire a MAC-10 with a suppressor through his windshield.
Oh,
I mean, through his passenger. They hit him with all 13 bullets.
Wow.
The guy in the motorcycle puts the motorcycle in front of his car with a light facing him, so it blinds him. Even if he is still alive, he was. The guy who shot jumped off the back, runs up, and they yelled at each other, exchanged some words, and then the guy fired some more. They left the bike, left the gun. Another Honda pulls up. They pick up the guy who waved him down, the guy riding and the driver, and they're gone. The Newport Beach helicopter's over there in 4 minutes.
Wow.
Nobody's there.
Nobody's there.
Nobody's there.
Wow.
Still hasn't been solved to this day. So that's the kind of stuff. To me, that was like, it was shocking that he got killed because I didn't think he could. But that was like my first taste of like, okay, everyone can go. But it was like, to me, it's just another day of doing business.
Yeah.
Right.
Because like when you're in that lifestyle, they always say in the paper, well, I don't know who's going to be boss and this and that. So-and-so got arrested. It doesn't even matter. Mm. It doesn't matter because within 10 minutes, there's already a new guy that's already over. That's why organized crime, the mafia, will always perpetuate, because of these other groups, like the drug dealing groups or these guys, you hear about this, they don't last for a long time. That's why Cosa Nostra has been around for more than 100 years.
Wow.
And they're still functioning.
Yeah, I mean, they're still functioning.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a gang that's beyond L.A., right? I mean, are they like in other places too? Or just
there's 27 families in the United States.
Wow.
They're multinational. They're all over Europe. They're they have them all over Italy. They're everywhere. and then they hook up with other groups. I mean, the Russians. They work with Russians. Guys from Serbia. Everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, Chinese triads who've been around for 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. The Japanese yakuza who basically run Japan.
Right. Wow.
I mean, those are all those groups are here to stay. Like the Japanese, the Chinese, the Italian mafia. The Russians, they're all pretty much here to stay.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been around for so long that, but the rest of the groups, when you get to like third world countries, they don't last very long. Mm.
So, I mean, I guess there's still drugs are still a popular thing. Would you say that it's more switched into like weapons and stuff now?
No, I mean, like the lifeblood of the mafia is gambling. That's what brings in the money. The day-to-day money is gambling and shylocking, loan sharking, loaning out money, which is another thing I find funny, because if you charge something on American Express, they charge you way more interest, and if you don't pay, they don't hurt you.
Right.
They ruin your credit, which is actually worse than getting beat up. You know, hey, if you get beat up, it's no big deal. Your TR, you get a bad mark on your credit. It could be like 7 years before it gets better.
That's true.
Okay. You break a few bones, it's a few months.
Yeah, like a black eye. Yeah. Or you know what? You're, as long as you pay, your credit's repaired right away.
Yeah.
You borrow some more. You know.
Yeah.
You miss a couple payments on a car loan, man. That's it. You can't get a new car for a while.
This is true.
You know. So I've always like
a good way to look at it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I look at it, I'm like, wait a second, because usually it's called pay. You charge 5 for 6. So if I gave her 500, she'd owe me 600 back. And that's a knockdown loan. But if I gave her 500, then every week she could pay me between $20 and $50 interest on it. Mm. It's actually less than, I'm telling you, than paying the American Express bill.
Really?
Yeah.
So where would I find someone who would loan me something?
they call that like, you call it usury and everything else, but I always just,
yeah,
I don't know. And see, it's really funny because now they have payday loans, which are even it's what we did.
Yeah.
It's worse.
It's true, huh?
Yeah.
At high interest rates. And
they're bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they have the law behind you, you know, like, we could just come and take all your stuff.
Yeah.
But see, like a good loan shark, a good gambler, he doesn't let, like, I'm not going to loan a waiter $5,000.
Right.
Okay. You have to look at like who is your customer? Who's your client? Mm-hmm. So like if I have a gambler, I had a gambler who was a big used car dealer around here,
mm-hmm.
and he would bet like $20,000-$30,000 a weekend, but he had like 4 or 5 car lots.
Mm-hmm.
So if he lost, he would pay.
Right.
And then one time he won $56,000, and my partner's like, oh, are you gonna pay him? I'm like, no, our deal is this: everyone comes to us because win or lose, we pay.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We pay on Tuesday. This is it. They know it. That we have a good reputation. There's no advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, just watch what happens. So I give him the money. In 3 weeks, this guy has lost the whole $56,000 and owes us another
$70,000.
Right.
You know? But it's not real. We're not out of commodity. We're not out of good. Or we're not doing any work. It's just, it's all on paper. It's like fake money. So I go to him and I say, hey, you know what? You have all these cars. I'm like, you know, and I know they mark them up, but I don't care. And I say, hey, you know, a friend of mine just got out of the joint. You can give me like a $10,000 car, and I'll knock $15,000 off your bill. And of course, he's thinking, well, I only paid $6,000 for that anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Then he's happy. I'm happy. And I had a dentist too. And then he would get a big bill, and then I would say, hey, you know, I got this guy. Can you get him some teeth? Or girl, hey, can you give her some veneers? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I'll take $20,000 off, or I'll give you $20,000 credit.
Wow.
See, that's fun.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you know that it's you're not out anything. I'm not out any. If I actually have to give you cash, then I'm out. But I'm not really losing anything.
So it's all on paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all on paper. That's why when I see on movies and TV shows where they're like the guy's like, oh, you're in over your head. I'm going to break your legs. I mean, then that's a bad bookie. It's a bad, right. a bad loan shark. Right. Because if I have to go beat you up, you're never going to pay.
Right.
Right.
Like, yeah, you know how I would punish my gamblers? What right. I would say to you? I would say, guess what? Now you can't gamble. You've lost the privilege. And if I find out that any other, I'm going to put the word out on you, mm-hmm. and I'm going to put your name out there. Mm-hmm. And if anyone else that I know of or we know of deals with you, then we're going to shut you down.
Right, mm-hmm.
And then they would come back with all the money. Please, please, please let me, because a gambler needs to bet.
Right.
Yeah.
And just be, you know, having to drive to Vegas, it doesn't cover it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So then you moved on and you got into porn.
Yes.
What were you doing there? You were behind the camera, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And,
he was using extends and in front of the camera. I'm kidding. Yeah.
And how long did that go for?
Wow, porn was probably like, I don't know.
A few years?
No,
few
15, years. 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah, it was a long time. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I owned stores. I owned distribution companies. I worked for a lot of companies. I became part of companies by guys would say, hey, man, you know, can you come in and protect us? We're having problems with this person, or I had a partner, and then mm-hmm. we just go kick him out.
Yeah.
I would tell the guy, like, hey, beat it. And now now you're I'm on your payroll.
Yeah.
You know,
because porn, I mean, is not illegal, right? Or it was back then.
It was in the 80s when I was in it here, you could not shoot in the city of L.A.
Wow. Mm.
Okay. So what we do is we would have walkie-talkies, no cell phones. We'd have walkie-talkies. And I'd have guys out in the corner watching. And then, like, I would use the camera, or I have a camera. The camera's the most expensive thing, about $80,000, $90,000.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then another person would take the shot film, because we'd shoot on film.
Mm-hmm.
And
keep
then,
switching it?
Yeah. Yep. Well, then we'd switch it, but also we'd take the shot one and then hide it mm-hmm. in a car trunk blocks away. So if the police raided us, then we wouldn't lose
the tape.
And then the other thing was, the one guy, there'd be one guy there with a backpack. So if the police were coming,
you just run.
That we can take the camera and the lenses, the most expensive part, and run.
Whoa.
And get away.
So you had it all figured out. Yeah. You guys have to stay on your feet, you know?
Yeah.
And, that's really smart.
Yeah. On their toes.
So,
go ahead.
Oh, I have a question. I guess because I worked on the movie Wonderland. I don't know if I told you this or not. But and so I remember the Eddie Nash was like the biggest dealer back in the day. And then they were involved with, you know, John Holmes and the whole porn industry. And that was through the 80s. Yeah. Did you know those guys or like work with or?
Well, I know of Eddie Nash because of another guy who was in the L.A. family, Anthony Fiato. He knew him well. And Anthony and his brother were the gangster brothers in L.A. And they used to do that. But I mean, Eddie Nash was like a dealer that was up here that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like media, like, I don't know, like up or not like high, mm-hmm. like compared to the guys that I dealt with in Orange County, he's nothing.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, they would move like 500, 600, like a friend of mine that I was going to put in my book named Jack. He's from Colombia. He's German, but he's Colombian. His dad was a Nazi that fled.
Right.
He was part of the Medellin cartel. I mean, he got arrested for delivering 500 kilos of cocaine.
Wow.
I mean, he was going to deliver another 500 more. They just got him before, so it's going to be 1,000. But he was upset with me. He called me out. He got sentenced to 20 years in prison. He won his appeal, so he got out like a couple years ago, and I went to meet him, and he had read my book. And he's like, I don't understand. I'm like, what? He goes, I gave you pictures. You have my story, and I couldn't make the book.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, 500 kilos wasn't enough. And I said, listen, it was 220,000 words. I had to cut it down to 138.
Mm-hmm.
You just fell by the wayside, you know? And he was like, okay. And then so the next one.
You're
but,
like, yeah, he's in the next one.
Yeah, you're the next one. That's the kind of guys that I dealt with. But yeah, I did know of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, did you eventually get caught by the law?
Oh, I mean, I've been arrested and locked up. And I was on probation, parole, or out on bail, or locked up since I was 15 years old until I was 35.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
So in and out of jail all the time.
But mostly on parole or on bail.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
So I would be, because like, okay, I get caught mm-hmm. for something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would spend all the money on lawyers and getting bailed out. And then I would commit.
Do it again.
Yeah. Well, no. I'd be, the minute that I got out, I'd be committing crimes to pay for all that.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
the lawyers, you know, were huge. I mean, one of my – I was just telling someone else. One of my copying bills, the Xerox bill for the court papers, was $14,000.
Oh, my God.
That's just for all the evidence. You know what I mean?
Wow.
To copy all that. So I had to come up with and those the lawyers don't take, you know, credit.
Right.
I got to come up with cash.
Right.
So
oh
I'm dropping off huge bags of cash to these guys. So I spent all that time. I never was not under supervised release until I was 35 years old. Mm-hmm. Like, I was never free. Like, right. One time in the 90s, I was off. Like, I got off parole in, like, June, and by September, I was rearrested for a new crime. That was, like, the longest period I had ever been without being in trouble.
And that's, you also said nothing really scares you, so it wasn't a big deal for you to be in jail, huh?
Well, like, another thing is I'm a fighter.
Yeah.
I mean, I have good skills. I'm a high-level fighter. Mm-hmm. And
So nobody could touch you.
I mean, they could touch me, but I just don't care. I mean, it's like I can take care of myself. The thing with when I hear other people say, oh, I wasn't scared. I'm scared, but I handle it different. Like, I can just relax and do it. Like, when someone's coming at me, I can deal with it.
Right.
And that's it. Like, anyone who says they're not scared is lying to you. I'm scared. I could be terrified, but I can still do what I had to do.
Right.
That, you know, like being in, I imagine that a guy in the army is the same thing. They might be terrified, or a SWAT guy. It might be terrified to go in, but they're going to do it, and you feel better after you do it.
Right.
Right.
So. Okay, well, we're running out of time. I wanted to ask you about the... eventually you ended up on the other side of the law. How did that happen?
The FBI had called me when I was traveling the country. And they actually didn't call me. They left a business card at my ex-wife's, at her grandma's house. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was weird because they know how to get a hold of me. It was the FBI. And so I called the number. And the guy's like, when you get back, we want to talk to you. So I figured I was getting arrested again.
Yeah.
And then he's like, no, it's just we want to talk to you. And I was like, okay. So I went to this meeting. I just wore a pair of sweats, a string, slip-on shoes, a sweatshirt, brought $20. I'm going away.
Yeah.
I walk in, and there's about 8 agents in there. And they told me that, that they just wanted to talk to me. So I talked to them. And then they said, listen, you're going to end up in prison for the rest of your life. Mm. Eventually. We're going to get you for RICO conspiracy, or you're going to get killed like everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're going to offer you is a fresh start. And I said, and they said, no money, no nothing, just a fresh start.
Mm.
And in life, you don't get too many fresh starts. So I saw that. I was already over the other lifestyle. So, and they told me, I said, well, how long is this going to last? And they said, 6 months to a year. Famous words.
Yeah.
A year comes. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, oh, just extend it some more. Then 2 years, 3 years. Some guys that I already work with had retired by the time I'm getting out.
Wow.
Other guys who started the agency as junior agents were now supervisors.
Wow.
And it's crazy. And that's how long I was doing it.
So they approached you and they said, we want you to turn people in? Or
no, they wanted me to travel because I traveled all over the world, all over the country. I spent 38 weeks a year on flying around on the road.
Right.
And they knew that I, whatever I went, like if I was in Cleveland, I would deal with crime groups. If I was in Pittsburgh, I would deal with the guy. I knew everyone. I'd go to Providence, Rhode Island. I knew everyone. And I was already in Brooklyn. So they said, look, we just want you to gather intelligence.
Mm.
And then while I was doing that, the FBI, the C-38 squad, that's the Columbo squad in New York, they approached me. And they were really interested in some guys that were taking stuff from the World Trade Center. And I happened to be really good friends with them. And that was, and I started wearing a wire on them. And then that's how that all came about.
Wow.
Wow.
Now, I mean, that would scare the shit out of me. Because now you're turning against the people that fed you pretty much.
Yeah.
And you have to turn on them. I mean, you know, we've seen stories like this. The Sopranos, everything, what happens when you do that.
It's one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... But you managed to stay alive.
Yeah, I mean, I wore a wire. I had a Rolex. They made a copy of my Rolex, and they had two of them.
Oh, wow.
We had an MP3 player, like a miniature recorder in there. It lasted 13 hours. I'd wear it. I'd go to these meetings. I mean, during the time when I was wearing a wire, I actually was asked to go on a hit.
Oh,
and I tape recorded the whole thing, and it didn't go down only because someone really had a heart attack at a restaurant next door to where we were going to do it. And like the cops and there was like firemen all over and we had to call it off. But I had no choice but to get in the car because it was already, it was happening.
Right.
And they told me to get in. There's no way you can make a phone call.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. You know what I mean? So the stuff was already happening and that was it. But I recorded that. They're still charging people because of that tape. Actually, they still charge people today.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, so the biggest question is, how do you feel walking around right now? I mean, you obviously feeling safe if you're coming on the radio and talking about this and wrote a book and all that. Aren't there people still that would want your head?
Well, I mean, I feel completely safe. I train people. I've trained fighters at gyms. I'm always at the same place. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some people that would probably like to. They can take their best shot. I can't live in fear. Otherwise, they control me. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is this. I was the same as they are for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I know what they do.
Right.
I know how tough I am.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah.
They have to send. I mean, I know the reality is they have to send six people out here from Brooklyn. It's not happening.
No. Right.
And it's not. And also, like, I heard a recording at one point they were contemplating killing me at the end. And the FBI played me the tape. And one guy said, look, if you get near him, if you get within arm's length of him, you guys got to grab him. You got to hold his arms because people are going to get hurt.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And see, I know all their tricks.
Yeah.
So good luck.
That's true. Huh?
The big thing is this. They don't ever come into a building with machine guns blazing. It's your friend who sets you up to get killed.
Yeah.
It's your friends.
Right.
Wow.
So I'm not getting in the car. I'm not driving in the back and the front seat with people backing me into some warehouse in Brooklyn. We're not going to the pier.
Right.
I'm not going to like Rockaway Beach in the middle of the night. So
yeah,
good
yeah.
luck.
Yeah. But it's hard to obviously trust people that way. So.
Well, yeah, but I'm not like the people I meet now.
It's all different. Yeah.
Yeah, it's different.
Like her.
Like me.
I mean, like
this
really.
Lifestyle,
yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. Okay. I'm in Hollywood. Let's be yeah. honest with the people. I'm not really worried.
Yeah.
I know the type. Like real recognizes real. Like I can see right away. Like inside my internal, like, eye or ESP, whatever you want to call it. Will you know? My gut instinct will tell me right away. Danger, danger, danger. And you have to learn how to, like, if you want to survive in this world, you have to learn that. That's why a lot of people. They always say, well, I thought something bad was going to happen, but I went and got money at the ATM and then I got robbed. Well,
yeah.
Dude, go with your first instinct. If it doesn't look right, leave.
Then, yeah.
Yeah,
this is true.
Yeah.
You have to pay attention to your intuition. See, Sam? I have a lot of healers on the show and like intuits. And
it's, yeah.
like...
it kept me alive. I mean,
yeah.
It's true. It's like it's so many times, like I was like, people are like, hey, let's go here, let's do that. And I'm like, nah. I don't want to go. And then they get in a tremendously bad car accident, or they get ambushed, mm-hmm. or they get beaten up or something. And it's just
right.
So many times. I've gone someplace and I told guys, hey, you know what? That doesn't look right. I'm not. Let's not do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then something bad happens to other people that tried it.
Right. So. Awesome.
Well, so where can people, can they still find your book?
Yeah, my book is available in hardback on Amazon, but it's also available in paperback from Simon & Schuster. It's on Amazon in every store.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's called Break Shot, A Life in the 21st Century American Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also on Facebook and Twitter.
So the book pretty much covers your life and the things we've been talking about.
Yeah, I mean, it covers a good part of it.
Yeah. When did the book come out?
2009.
Nice.
The
hardback. Cover.
Yeah, the hardback and the soft paperback came out last year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, this is cool, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually, maybe there'll be a movie on you or based on you or something. That would be
working
cool.
Working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Kenji, thank you so much. Very,
yes.
Very entertaining, very informative. And I just salute you for staying alive after all this. You know?
I agree.
I mean, that's a big accomplishment right there, you know.
Do you want to give out your Twitter to everyone so fans can follow?
Yes, I'm at Kenji OC
awesome.
On Twitter.
Perfect.
Sounds good.
Kenji OC.
Okay, well, Kenji Gallo, thank you so much again.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on.
Brigetta, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you all tomorrow.
Bye.
You've been listening to Sam in the Morning with Brigetta, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Sam in the Morning with Brigetta is an LA Talk Radio production where we say what we want.